So, good morning again. This is Ivan Tina. I'm a PhD student here in the Art and Technology program of UT Dallas. And today I have the great pleasure to make a podcast for the Art and Climate Change for Creative Disturbance with Amelia Jensen and two French artists. Can you please introduce yourself? Amelia, maybe?
Sure. I'm Amelia Jason, and I'm a graduate student in journalism at the University of North Texas in Denton.
I'm Sandra Bébier-Valérien, and I'm an artist.
And I'm Gaspard Bébier-Valérien. I'm an artist as well, working with Sandra.
Thank you very much. So actually, we're making this podcast after the Watering Hole session that we have every Friday here in the Art and Technology building. It just happened that you, Sandra, and Gaspard, you are actually resident at Central Track, which is the UT Dallas residency program. And your project has to do with fracking. And it just happened that Amelia just wrote her dissertation at UNT on that same topic. So maybe the question will be to you, Amelia, what was your dissertation about? And can you just explain what is fracking for people who don't know what it is?
Sure, yeah. I'm still working on its master's thesis about fracking discourse and narratives in the media. So hydraulic fracturing is sort of a new old technology where we're shooting huge amounts of liquid down to the earth trying to break up shale rock and release natural resources. But here in this area, it's been kind of contested because we're having a lot of earthquakes that scientists are having a hard time explaining. And cities like in Denton, where I'm from, they have tried to ban fracking within the city limits because they don't like the way it's being zoned. So it's a pretty hot topic in the media. And I'm looking at the narratives that are coming from four different directions. So we've got industry, we've got scientists, activists and journalists who are all trying to put out information about this. So I'm looking at what is actually getting to the people.
We both from France, me and the two French artists. I know that in France this is a highly controversial topic. It has, we against in Europe, we against hydraulic fracturation. How does the American opinion react?
Sure. I think it's kind of all over the map. I think people are a little confused about what's actually going on. Mm-hmm. They're getting a lot of different messages. They hear that it may be polluting air and water, maybe causing earthquakes, but then they also hear that it's not, that these earthquakes might have happened anyway, it was just a matter of time, or that the air quality is only an issue when there's a blow off, like a release of gas periodically at a fracking site. So I think it's kind of across the board. A lot of people that are pro-fracking are getting, they have mineral rights, so they make money off of that. So it's kind of like when you pay to have a windmill put on your property, you make money every year. And then people in Denton are really upset with the regulation, the status of regulation of the industry, and very upset that they feel like they made their choice, they took a stand and said we don't want it in the city, and the state has overturned that ban. So I think there's a lot of confusion, huge confusion out there.
Sandra, what is your art project about? What's your relationship with fracking and hydraulic fracturation in general?
Well, at first we wanted to make a project about the earthquakes.
Yes.
As an image of changes, of catastrophe, and because we had a lot of movements and things going on around the world, and societies are changing pretty fast.
Yes.
And as we came here in Dallas, we were aware about this question of earthquakes due to maybe, probably, to fracking. And so it was very interesting to get more into this question. And making some research, we found out that it was really a social struggle that was going on, because you have topics popping like patriotism.
Mm-hmm.
And you have also the question of individual rights.
Like what?
Like
individual rights. What do you mean?
Well, like can someone tell me what to do with my land?
Okay.
I have my right to do what I want with my land. Okay. But on the other side, you have someone who said, but I have the right to have a good health. So that's a question of boundaries and individual interests.
Mm-hmm.
But also you have the industry's interests. And then above that, you have this geopolitical interest. So you have plenty of layers, which is very interesting. And that makes conflicts. And that's what we want to work on our project. And also, as you said, that we are French and we have this this issue too about fracking.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very a different context because we don't, as when we have a property, we don't own the minerals.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we cannot make money on it.
Yeah.
It's that's one difference.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what our government is trying to do is to say, okay, what you people don't like, it's the chemicals in the ground, but maybe we can change the chemicals. But what would you say if earthquakes are occurring because of the fracking? That's another problem.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure that people in France will react very, even harder, if they know that earthquakes are occurring.
Yeah.
And because we have plenty of nuclear plants.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's very dangerous. So it's we have both an artistic interest, but also an interest as citizens to be well informed.
So I mean, I'm not sure. I have many questions, but I just want to ask this one. How does it, because basically from what I understand, you're saying that earthquakes are now done by human, not by nature anymore. So how does it fit the whole whole Anthropocene discourses? Mm-hmm. Like now man is able to make geological change and influence nature in that way. So is your art practice part of that movement, or I mean, how do you situate yourself in the whole Anthropocene discourse? Coming back to what
it's Amelia true that the idea that an environmental issue and what is supposed to be made by nature now is made by man.
Mm-hmm.
That's something sure that into we are very interested to discuss. Because it's so powerful. When you think about the surface of Earth,
mm-hmm.
it's huge, and what it takes to move, even if it's tiny, because the industry, what they say is it's not big deal, because it's the magnitude is so low, but when you think about the power needed to move, even a little bit to have a 2.5 magnitude, it's huge. That's huge power. And it's like in another time, I think people will feel like be God,
mm-hmm.
you know, to be able to move this amount of earth.
Of energy, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, and I think the science is kind of still developing for being able to see what exactly we're doing under the ground. Because I've been told that the actual operation of fracking is giving the industry a lot of information. So when they actually do the frack and get their seismic back, then they know what's going on. But until that point, when they're doing preliminaries, it's hard to judge how thick those layers are. You know, it may change from one drilling spot to another what layer you're reaching when you're fracking. So I think there's a lot of confusion because the science is still developing around it and it's happened so quickly. But talking about the Anthropocene,
mm-hmm.
You know, and the climate change narrative and relating fracking to climate change, you know, I've heard a lot about how Earth will recover. You know, humans are the ones that are going to suffer. And if it has to get rid of us, then so be it. But that kind of brings into fracking and climate change both kind of an end of the world narrative that I think is really hard for people to deal with. It makes it hard for people to even discuss these issues when it's that grave of a conversation. And I think that affects everybody that's in the conversation.
I think there is a good quote which says that events are natural and catastrophes are human. And maybe that's what is happening. But it's hard to affirm, you know, something like this. That's why in our project we want to use fiction and narrative and to make the catastrophe happening in the project.
Another side which was really interesting of during your presentation was this notion of risk that's actually drives your project. You're saying that we are more and more how you say that? We are people that you have been interviewed are ready to take the risk of getting the environment shaped by technology today, even at the risk of having huge catastrophes. So what's your reflection about that? I mean,
the more you live with the technologies, in fact, the more you accept the possibility of the accident, of the catastrophe.
Yeah.
The risk is inherent to the technology.
Yeah.
I'm used to say that technology is power. And in fact, that's something very, very, very easy to understand when we talk about earthquakes, because as Nora says, that's so huge. It's something we can't not imagine at the beginning. We think that's a natural phenomenon. But now, the more we go and we use and we develop technologies, the more we have accidents or the possibility of the accidents. Virilio, Paul Virilio, says that. He says we have a train which goes more and more fast. That means we have more and more violent accident. You have bigger planes. That means we have
bigger crash.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's something which is really embodied in the culture of this, in our culture, in our society. The way we live with technology is, in fact, a way we accept to be more in a play of death, of risk. The acceptance of the risk is something inherent to the technology. And with the earthquakes, it's the right example, in fact. Really, with the fracking.
But the problem here, talking about climate change and environmental issue, is that you're making risk not only for you, but for for the community around you. So how do you... I was thinking about this individualistic ideology that you was talking about. How those people who are ready to... I mean, if you make frackings in your house... And it has effect on your neighbors. Mm-hmm. You're not only responsible for it, for your own damage. You're also responsible for other people. Mm-hmm. What did they tell you for that? I mean, for example.
I don't know if we are more keen to share, you know, the troubles. That's the point where the. A society based on individualities, or even virtualities, because we talked before about virtualities. You are less and less aware of what other things, what damage you can make to them. I think it's something maybe that couldn't happen decades ago. It's something that we are losing, you know. Be aware of others, and the more you get individuals, the more the other is far away from you, and maybe you will know about their troubles because because you will see on the screen,
yeah.
On the media, on TV. So it's still far away.
That's the famous example of Facebook, like you're more aware about the birthday of your friend in India than your neighbors in the same building.
Well, it's interesting actually putting that in context of fracking, where, you know, we're dealing with something really far under the earth that might as well be virtual because we can't see it or deal with it. And I think that's maybe why it's hard for people to form an opinion, because they don't understand exactly what's going on. So they can't say, well, I agree with this or I don't, or based on what I know in my field, it may be okay or not. But then on the flip side, as far as it affecting your neighbors, I mean, it's more widespread and affecting more people in one way or another than most things that have come before it in the energy industry. So it's kind of a kind of an interesting dichotomy there, where it's something that we can't tangibly grasp, but it's having effects left and right all around us, but we're still having a hard time both understanding it and connecting with victims, I think.
But maybe also because if you have a victim, you have someone taking responsibility. And maybe the question at one moment that we have the most impact will be, who is going to pay the bill? And when you have people having their houses with frags everywhere, and the house is moving, so that's very dangerous. But maybe the insurance company would just say, oh, we don't want to pay. I mean, it's just an earthquake. It's natural. And so who will pay the bill? But if you start to say that all the earthquakes happening, knowing that I think it's several millions of wells involved in the earthquakes.
Mm-hmm.
So if for each earthquakes that, if you can, well, can you prove that it's made because of the companies? But if you can make your point, then we have to pay for a lot of people, and for earth, but for the houses, so for materials, and. It's kind of sad to say, but that's the last argument.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, okay, we have to make prevention, we have to prevent people from being hurt. But at the end, maybe it would just be the cost of fracking.
I'm sorry, because we're already at 17 minutes of recording. I will have two questions, as conclusion. Maybe, what was the conclusion of your dissertation and your research, and maybe can tell us what would be the next step of your project. But maybe Amelia, what did you learn from that?
Sure, yeah. So the research is still in progress. So I'll let you know in May when I walk the stage how it went.
But for the people in Paris attending the conference, what would be a message for I'm not sure.
Sure. I think the message is probably that we are living in a completely different media environment than we've ever lived in before. So we're used to the model where journalists go out, find out what's happening, they bring back the facts, they tell us what the risk is, who was involved, who is implicated to be at fault. But right now, especially with fracking, journalists don't know. That information is very hard to get. Scientists are trying to prove things, but there's a lot of either bunk science out there or science that is being discredited. Falsely discredited. Then there are activists who are stopping their day jobs, writing blogs, because they're so concerned about this issue. So there's a lot of information out there, and I just think it's a radically different environment, and that's what I'm researching as far as the media messages. Yeah.
And from the artist's point of view?
You mean what we?
What the next step of your project?
Next step is a performance.
Yeah.
At the beginning of the project, we wanted to make an installation with a seismograph, and now, as we meet several people and we discover the context here, we think that we will get so much information that we can't do everything in a such short period. So for the conclusion of the residency, we do a performance, very something using mostly sound, but sound very physically, just to we try to make the experience of the earthquake, to redo this experience for the public. We would like them to feel the infrabasses in their bodies directly, and to connect both testimonies, both archives from the media, and all work, sound, musical work made from all the feelings we have directly in this situation. So that will be the next step. And I think that will be something more like artistic than what we expected at the beginning. In the beginning, we were thinking more about a documentary or sociological project. Now that will be, I think, something more physical and poetic, maybe. And that's why we use the fiction, not to be too close from the subject and giving just a view, a point of view, and making it too much frontal, too much obvious. That's a complex subject, in fact. And that's why we want to keep it enough open and to give, not to give answers, but to give clues and to try the public to make wonder, to want the public wonder and ask himself what is happening, what is rising, in fact. What does that mean?
Okay, thank you very much, everybody. I think we're going to close this first part of the podcast here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.